Hey, y'all. Welcome to Water Break. We're back after a week off.
Yeah.
We were having a little family vacation where I didn't follow any health.
No.
We
vacationed differently.
Our health codes. I broke them all. It was great. And we should vacation more like that more often.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say no to that.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
For those of you are new, we need to come up with like a tagline, like the intersection of faith and health.
No, don't.
Not that one.
Never say that again.
Faith and fitness.
No, I don't love that either.
Not that one either. Yeah.
But yeah, we need to do some like branding or some tagging. Yeah. We'll figure it out. You guys can email us some ideas.
Yeah. Wrench. What's our email address, baby? Wrenchmedia@gmail.com.
Wrenchmedia@gmail.com.
Don't say the wrong one.
@gmail.com.
If you're kind of new and just tuning in to what we're doing, you know, the podcast is hosted on our Fight, Laugh, Feast network. You can actually go and download our app. That's the best way we recommend you to kind of connect with us. Cancel culture and all that stuff. Listening to us on our app is the best way to go. But we're part of the Fight, Laugh, Feast network. Water Break was actually a show originally started just kind of a couple years ago to kind of hit some of my own personal strings on kind of faith, culture, and politics and so forth. And over the years, as my workload shifts and changes across politics, we've actually been talking about doing our own show since probably COVID at least.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just never able to pull it together. But finally, we kind of pulled it together. So Water Break is now kind of the umbrella under which me and my wife kind of talk about faith and fitness and health. And I'm so that's kind of, I guess, what Water Break is about. And so we really want to approach this subject. Go back and listen to our first episode. Our first episode is, I think, very helpful. It kind of gives you the context of what we're trying to do. We want to approach health not like a legalist would, and not like a trendsetter would want to. We don't want to be trendy in how we view our health. We don't want to be legalistic in how we view our health, but we want to approach the subject in a way that it's kind of freeing. There's a lot of guilt around, you know, women in health, men in health. There's a lot of guilt around food, dieting, and so forth, but we want to approach the subject in a way where it's helpful and refreshing and not driven by guilt and trends and so forth. So that's kind of, I guess, the gist of our show. Anything you want to add to that, baby?
Yeah, I mean, also, I just think there's so much information out there, a lot of it conflicting, you know, and it's just a lot to sift through. And so we're hoping that we can help with that also, just kind of cut through some of that and hopefully create some sort of perspective or helpful, insight into all this. You being a regular person who isn't really into, I don't know.
I'm a regular.
You're a regular.
I'm a regular guy.
We're going to do a whole show about you.
Just a regular water boy.
And then I've been deep in the space for like 20 years.
Yeah,
so between the two of us, we hope we can strike some sort of middle ground that from a Christian perspective that actually is helpful in a actually like applicable way. Cause that's another issue.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and I guess this is kind of to the theme of what we're going to talk about today in a lot of ways, but a lot of times there's, best case scenario type advice given, or like if you were rich and paid to be fit and had no children,
and if you had a 4-hour work
week, this is what you should do.
Yeah.
And it's like, and maybe it's true, but like, it's like, who in the world can actually do that? So we're trying to talk about what are things that real people can actually do.
Yeah. And so before we get into topic, one more thing is we have our national conference, prodigalamerica.com is where you can go, prodigalamerica.com. It's October 31st through November 2nd. It really is a very family-friendly conference. I mean, we have hundreds of kids join us with families. And, we have about 1,500 people that have been attending our conferences. I'm hoping we're in Fort Worth this year, so I'm praying for 3,000 people to attend. And it's a very good-sized, wonderful audience, lots of kids around. It's a blast. So we'd hope to see you in Fort Worth. Annie, of course, will be there with me.
Yes, look forward to it.
In Fort Worth, October 31st through November 2nd in Fort Worth, Texas, the promised land, as you might know it. So today's topic is, what about the dudes? We haven't talked about men very much. And it's not, it's just, we're covering all sorts of topics. But, as I was kind of thinking about this topic, you know, we live in a very different world than I would say a lot of the history of the world. So our context is very different. We have cars, we have cell phones, we have and/or air conditioner, you know, and a lot of, you know, past history, past civil societies never got to some of the advanced points that we've gotten to in terms of technology and so forth. And with that's come a lot of men, our jobs are different.
Right.
We aren't, there's a lot of men who have jobs inside, not outside, at a computer, sitting at a desk 6 to 8 hours a day, you know, air conditioning, you know, it's just amazing. And so I think with that, you know, our health shifts with kind of the external environment and what we're around and mm-hmm. what we're able to maybe get away with or not get away with in our health and our food and so forth. So I think kind of in our modern context, I don't think there's ever been in the history of the world where people would pay to go to a gym to work out and sweat.
You know? Well, it's actually really weird to think about it because like the whole concept of a gym is such a new, in terms of like human history, it's such a new construct.
Concept.
And we're like fatter and more unhealthy than ever.
Yeah.
And like we have more gym memberships and more supplements and more people are caring about or trying and doing all these extra things outside of their, you know, like regular life to be fit. And it's like really not going well.
I should have looked up the numbers before this, but like the health and fitness industry is a billions of dollar industry.
Yeah. It's a huge industry.
So we're spending more money on our health than ever before in any society.
Yeah. Yes.
And we're, you know, I know some previous societies had cancer, previous societies had heart attacks, previous society, you know, but it seems like that
arguably not as much as now.
Statistically, you can measure our unhealthiness in our society in a way that we wouldn't able to in the past.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because of you know, where we're at, and so we're a very stagnant population, especially men who are trying to provide their families and end up in this indoor situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the phone. On my computer, on the microphone, you know, 8 hours a day. That's my job. So I'm largely sitting in a chair, staring at a screen or staring at a camera. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when we first got married in college, I played basketball in college down in California. I think I was 6'2", 185, like dripping wet.
Yeah, really thin.
Like,
he was really
like
thin.
Really thin, really springy and athletic. But then when I graduated college over the years, I think when I married you, I must have been probably 190, 195. I was probably about 190. Not much difference between my 185. I was probably 190-ish.
Yeah, you were still really thin.
You're still pretty thin. You go back and look back. Actually, there's in 2005, there was no cameras, no smartphones.
There's no smartphones.
Right, but I still got old pictures of myself and, you know, pretty skinny. So that, and then our first year of marriage, and Annie wasn't like an amazing cook.
I really was not.
No.
But I did bake a lot back then.
You were more of a baker. That's true.
I did bake a lot back then.
That is true.
We fattened you right up.
I gained my freshman 20 my first year of marriage.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I had like stretch marks on my legs or
like
something
common,
like that.
Yeah. That's a common theme for sure. But that's like, that's a little more specific. That's like first year of marriage.
But
like,
also, I wasn't in the office yet.
No.
At some point, halfway through our first year of marriage, that's when I went in the office. I was working construction.
Yeah.
And then halfway through. So I gained. Interesting. I wonder if it's more like I gained that weight when I got into the office. But I probably gained 20 pounds my first year of marriage to you. So I went up you know, 205. And then now I'm probably about 225 right now, excluding vacation weight.
We shall not talk about vacation that. Weight. It doesn't count.
But, you know, basically, since I got married in 2005, I mean, this is probably the typical man's journey, too.
A lot of the time, yeah.
Where, you know, you get married, you go to work, you focus on raising kids, you focus, you know.
Yeah.
And then 20 years into it, which is now about where we're at.
Almost, yeah.
I'm, you know, 30 to 40 pounds different. And everything, and 185 was pretty light too. I mean, I could have gained some of that weight.
But there's usually an insidious, especially as people, and this is true of women too, get past around 30. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it starts a little earlier if you're a lean dude. Sometimes it hits later, but there's like that insidious like couple pounds a year.
Yeah,
that usually, unless you're
that
really
stays.
That just slowly builds up, and you know, for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, no, a lot of guys are just like you.
Yeah.
And are in the same kind of boat. And it's funny because like, I have so many thoughts about this. It's so much of my career, probably because I am a woman, I've worked with majority women, mm-hmm. On the exercise front, on the nutrition front, mm-hmm. whatever. Women are more complicated. Women tend to have, in some ways, more issues because of that. We're more hormonally complex. Where we cycle every month. We mm-hmm. have to deal with giving birth,
up and down of hormones.
Yeah, yeah.
And
stuff just like that. So, we're just more of a complex case. And women are also just way more likely to get a trainer, mm-hmm. to get a nutritionist, to in general ask for help.
It's because guys can do it themselves.
Well, and I mean, they're what's that age old?
Guys don't need to ask for directions. Yeah, they don't ask for a trainer.
Well, so it's way more rare. Yeah. And women do tend to take. I mean, they seem to naturally care a little bit more about their health and care a little more even about how they look. Mm-hmm. Even, of course, there's exceptions, but. All those reasons combined, a lot of my attention and message has been towards women. And I would say if you just look at the broader like health and fitness kind mm-hmm. of culture and mm-hmm. how it messages, and if you get on Instagram or you get on TikTok and just kind of the messaging that you mm-hmm. see, really a lot of it is geared towards women mm-hmm. for that reason is because mm-hmm. women are the biggest consumers of it. Now there's the subset of like, and I want to mention this because this matters. There is the subset of like the meathead gym bro, you know, T-Nation mind pump guy. Mm-hmm. And there's a big market to those guys. Mm-hmm. And there's really nothing wrong. If you have the time and the ability and the knowledge to be in the gym, mm-hmm. lifting heavy weights an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, and you just love pounding protein and that's just kind of like your life and it's working for you, then that's totally fine. But so there is marketing to those guys, but all the other guys, mm-hmm. which is like majority, especially like when I look at the men in our, like our, you know, Moscow community, like in our Christian community, most of you guys are not lazy. Mm-hmm. Like I look around at men who are like in their 30s, in their 40s, and I definitely see a trend of unhealth, and mm-hmm. you can just see it, you know, like the big mm-hmm. belly and the like, my gosh. I don't think you could run 100 meters without hurting yourself. And like, your blood work is probably really bad. Your blood pressure is probably through the roof. And I see unhealth, but it's not due to, for the most part, men being lazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's way more, I think, guys running into the same issues that you run into for years, which is just like, you are out there hustling. You always are working on several different things at once, starting mm-hmm. businesses, having your hand in this, having your hand in that. Yeah, right. You're working from sun up to sundown. You add kids in. You're mm-hmm. the kind of dad, and all these other guys I think are too, who are like active, present dads, right? So you're mm-hmm. like, you know,
we aren't going to the bar at night. We aren't disassociating from the family.
I mean, he was getting up mm-hmm. in the middle of the night to help feed babies along with me. I mean, they're standing in the back of the church, bouncing the fussy baby. Right. And I mean, they're coaching all their kids' soccer teams. I mean, that's the season we're just coming out of.
When can the dad work out?
Exactly. I know this has been true for you, and it took me a long time it took me a long time to figure this out about you, that the age old adage that I was taught in trainer school, which is just, you just got to make time for it.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you just need to do an hour a day in the gym. And if you aren't making it happen, then there's something wrong with you. You're not prioritizing mm-hmm. enough. You don't want it enough. Get up earlier, stay up later, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. That's what you're taught. Mm-hmm. And that kind of works when you're like single mm-hmm. and maybe paid to be fit like personal trainers are. But that message to regular people, mm-hmm. like a dad of four who's like trying to be a good dad and he's coaching all the teams and running all the businesses, probably has 10 years of sleep debt that needs to be paid off. I know that's true for you. Mm-hmm. That message doesn't work.
Yeah.
And even with you, for years, we've tried this, we've tried that, but it's just like, you're not paid to be fit. Mm-hmm. You're incredibly busy. Not like, it's not an excuse. In your case, you actually are incredibly busy. And this is the big one, and I think a lot of dads will resonate with this, any second of spare time that you do have, mm-hmm. you are not going to go spend that at the gym. Yeah. You're going to mm-hmm. go spend that with your family. Yeah. And I really can't really begrudge you for that.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the whole thing that we're, the whole, you know, conversation we're trying to have right now is for guys like that.
Right.
And
right.
it's like, what are you supposed to do? Because I think mm-hmm. what happens is a lot of those guys just end up doing nothing because they're just like, I can't fit anything in. I can't do the traditional model. I mean, you're not going to count your calories. You don't have time. You mm-hmm. don't care. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, you know, wake up at, wait, you're already getting up at 5. So you're not going to get up at 4. And arguably you'll probably do more harm than good sleeping even less.
Yeah. Right. Right.
In order to work out, like there's, you know, whole studies dedicated to that. So we want to talk about like, what are guys like that, which I think is most men, mm-hmm. at least in our community, like what can they do to make some sort of marketable difference in their health? And I want you guys
because I'd say because the current trend right now is if, you know, I'm 225 now and I kind of keep up with what I'm doing now. I mean, I could be 245 in the next, you know, 20 years.
Exactly. It's not a great trajectory and if part you don't of, intervene. Yeah.
And part of how you brought this up before, but, you know, you just want to be functional when you're got grandkids, you know, when you're 70 years old, you want to be able to pick up your grandkids, you know?
Totally.
You want to help your kids move into their new house, whatever.
Yeah. And just like leave and live to see, you know, not just like live to see your grandkids or even great grandkids, but actually be able to like pick them up, play with them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're post-millennial, like we've talked about in past shows. Like we want to think long-term, and it's very easy for you hardworking dads who are exhausted, you're burdening a ton of stress. That's another thing that hits your guys' health so much is that all the financial, you know, and if you're doing it right as a husband, you're not letting that touch your wife really. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And like you guys just shoulder a lot and that there's no way. I was just talking to Neil. No, it wasn't Neil. I was talking to Sharon about this right before we recorded. Like, no matter how like spiritually sound you guys are, and you're a really good example of this, and no matter how like mentally and emotionally you handle or carry all that stress, your body, it still takes a toll on your body. And it usually shows up, like your blood work doesn't lie. It shows up in your blood pressure. It shows up in your, it shows up somewhere. Mm-hmm. So you just need, we need to be mindful of these things, and we need to figure out, okay, what's like the minimum effective dose? Like what's the smartest approach, the most practical, doable approach for guys like you who really oftentimes time comes to zero. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to be a gym rat. Mm-hmm. You have no desire to be a gym rat. And maybe, you know, and this is what I want to say. What we're talking about today is like minimal effective dose. It's not like if someone was going to ask me, what is the ideal fitness health routine? It would be more than this for sure. And maybe in another phase of life, you know, like maybe one, probably, I don't know. You're always someone who's, you're always biting up more than you can chew, but it's like, you know, maybe when your kids are little, this is what you do. Maybe when they move out and you have a little more time, you do actually prioritize getting in the gym and lifting some heavier weight and improving your strength and your longevity that way. That's great. But a lot of times we're just, we'll find ourselves at least sometimes in a season where that's just not doable. So it's like, okay, what can we do?
Right, right.
And that's what we want to talk about.
And so about 3.5 months ago or so.
Oh yeah.
Me and Annie kind of talked through a way of maybe starting, a good starting point for me and a good starting point for, you know, what, given my schedule, given like my context and everything, my work life, family life, you know, I mean, I hadn't had a Saturday free from November until about 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Because I was working or coaching basketball or whatever.
Yeah. Just,
So kind of given that context, you know, what are some of the adjustments we can do? And one of the things I like, we've talked about this before. We talked about, you know, start by getting blood work.
Yeah. And, that's number one. And the thing, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing I like about that for me is because I think there's so much feelings and emotions and subjectivity that is continually brought into the health world. That like, well, the blood work is nice is because it kind of puts kind of some objective, you know, markers into your life about, oh, you know, you know, in Idaho, we constantly struggle with low vitamin D. I mean, that's just, you know, there's in the winter, there's not much sun and it's cold and the days are short. We, you know, our winter days can, the sun can come up about 7:30 and can go down about 4:30. I mean, that's literally our winter at the very shortest of the day in the winter. That's what can happen.
Yeah.
So you can see that in the blood results. You can see it's like, oh, Gabe has low vitamin D, which I did when we got my blood work back in November.
No surprise. I mean, almost
no surprise. Everybody surprised
in
about
the Pacific Northwest is deficient in vitamin D. But yeah, no, blood work is huge. I mean, you want to know, we can talk about it if you want to, some basic markers. You want to know what to ask for. Obviously, you need a doctor who's going to cooperate. but just some basic, basic blood markers is a good place to start, just so you know what your baseline is and where your particular issues of unhealth are. Because everybody's different. Some of it's due to genetics. Some of it's due to just looking out. Some of it's due to lifestyle up to that point, diet up to that point. But usually, I mean, I have everybody look, number one, at your, you know, your glucose, your fasted glucose. If you just get a CMP, that's a comprehensive metabolic panel. It's very standard. Most doctors order that once a year if you're getting annual blood work. If you just get that, you'll get your fasted glucose. But I would add on to that a fasted insulin. Most doctors will do it, but
what's the difference between fasted insulin and fasted glucose?
So your fasted glucose is just simply when you wake up in the morning before you've eaten anything, how much glucose, blood, you know, sugar is it just sitting in your blood. And that's telling You do need, there's nuance to it. So you want either your doctor or someone, you want to be talking with someone who really understands kind of the ins and outs of that. But like, for example, when we got yours done at first, it was like up in the 120s, and that's way too high.
My fasted glucose.
Yeah. That's way too high. no matter who you are. Yeah. So that was good to know. Like, okay, we have some blood sugar work to do. Yeah. Fasted insulin, that's how much insulin is currently sitting in your bloodstream. And remember, your insulin is a hormone that your pancreas sends out to clear glucose.
Okay.
And the reason I like fasted insulin, and it's still, it kind of baffles me that doctors don't just automatically test that every year. Uh-huh. Because oftentimes fasted insulin will creep up and become, well out of range, too high, way before it shows up in your glucose or your A1C. Mm-hmm. So if we were thinking really preventatively, which I think we all should, a fasted insulin is a really good thing to look at. And so that term that we talk about all the time on the show, insulin resistance, which is kind of your precursor to full-on diabetes, your fasted insulin will kind of...
Will your fasted insulin be high or low?
If it's high. Exactly. Okay. And it's high on you too. And that's another thing we knew we needed to work on. And it's no surprise.
So given, if it's high, shouldn't that be clearing the glucose?
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah, but what you want is cells in your body that are very insulin sensitive, which would mean that it takes very little insulin to effectively clear the glucose that is in your bloodstream and can deposit it into your cells, ideally to be burned for energy.
Okay, so no, 100%. So what would the scenario look like? Let's say I had high glucose and a low insulin in my blood, what would that be communicating?
That's really, it's rare to have, it's more common to have it the other way around, having your glucose in range,
which and again, high insulin.
And then, but insulin being high, meaning you're on a trajectory.
Yeah. Is it very, basically saying it's very inefficient. The insulin's very inefficient in clearing sugar.
If the glucose is still in range, but the insulin is high. Yep. Yeah. So it means like, okay, it's getting it done. And that's why your glucose is like, okay, maybe you're like at a 95 and you have to be like over 100 to be flagged as high, which I also have a problem with that, but that's just kind of our lab ranges. Uh-huh. But if your insulin is like up in the 30s, that means your body is pumping insulin out in attempts to keep it low. Effectively. Yep. Exactly. Uh-huh. And you end up with what they call insulin resistance, where your cells become resistant to that insulin. And what we want is sensitivity. Yeah. And really, one of the biggest markers of health long-term is the ability to manage your insulin. That's very, very, very important.
Okay. And so, part of this, a little context, I'm just talking about all my health today. Little context is I got diabetes in my family.
Yeah.
It's grandpa had it. My dad died he had a heart attack, but basically it's diabetes that really got him.
So the context really matters. Yeah, so for you, that really matters. And we know we have work to do.
Yeah.
In terms of managing your insulin and your blood glucose. Some other markers, I would look at your lipids, right? Most doctors will.
A lipid?
So like your cholesterol panel.
Okay.
And more than anything, I'd pay attention to your trigs and your HDL. You want your HDL to be as high as possible and your triglycerides, your trigs to be on the lower side. I care about those personally more than I care about your LDL, which is, the classic bad cholesterol. But again, for some people, no problem. Like you, for example, your lipids were fine.
Yeah, it was like solid. Nothing.
Solid lipids. Solid lipids. Yeah. So I was like, wow, good job. But that was great.
I made lipids great again.
That was great because we are moving you towards we're moving you towards spending some time in low carb. And the fact that your lipid panel looks so good tells me without doing further testing, which you can do, that your body handles saturated fat decently well. Mm-hmm. And so that's great because that's what we're going to be eating. Yep. So I would look at lipids. That matters. And I would also look at like vitamin D, like we talked about, and then liver enzymes. That's a huge one. And especially you guys, Presbyterians.
Yeah.
Presbyterians like to drink a lot. And I don't have a problem with enjoying your scotch.
Yep.
But man, if you are sedentary, if you generally also don't eat great and you drink scotch and wine and whatever every night, a lot of times you look at your liver enzymes and they are not looking so good. And you really, you want to watch that because your liver is a very, very, very important organ. Mm-hmm. It basically is the detoxifier of your entire body. Yeah. So if you're eating high sugar, high processed foods, liver takes
out eating out and then in addition to that you have a glass of wine and scotch
and
or whatever,
just throwing alcohol at it just constantly. I mean, it really it matters. So your liver enzymes is another big one, especially in this community.
Yeah.
And yours not looking so good. So we had our work cut out for us there. But again, you know, you wouldn't know if you didn't test. So I would say, the insulin, the glucose.
So I preferred lipids. Ignorance before this.
I know. Yeah, you did.
I was like, I didn't want to test for the longest time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Glucose, insulin, lipid panel.
Yep.
Cholesterol, all of that.
Yep. Liver.
Liver for sure. Vitamin D. And then, you know, if I was working with someone one-on-one, depending on nuance and depending on their particular context, I might look at a few more things, but that's a great place to start. A testosterone is also a really good one to look at just to see kind of where you're at, because that's a big one. And a lot of guys are really low.
Yeah,
testosterone is kind of, it's kind of an issue right now.
Right.
And then the other one I'm just going to say that is really important. That's not a blood test. It's blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
and we have our own blood pressure machine at home now.
Yeah, well, and you should, you guys, because
they're pretty cheap now.
They are cheap. I think I got it for like $30 or something at like Walmart. Uh-huh. But I recommend it because number one, white coat hypertension, which is basically
a real thing.
It is a real thing. I have it. And it's just, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's just when you are at the doctor's office and then you know that they're going to take your blood pressure.
And they take out their cold stethoscope.
And then they take your blood pressure. Yep. And it doesn't matter, guys. Like, I don't get nervous at doctor's offices at all. I'm not a nervous person, but I still have it. Like, my blood pressure in a doctor's office, no matter what.
Always high.
Is high. And when I go home at any point throughout the day, not just in the morning, it's actually lower than average.
Yeah.
So you want to check that.
That's
you,
funny.
For example, though, that's in funny. The doctor's office, your blood
it
pressure
doesn't
is
matter.
High.
Location did
and
not
also
matter.
Also, when you're home, it's high. And that is, it is truly a silent killer, and it's a big deal. And I think you dads, again, who are working hard, not a lot of time to do a lot of
carrying
cardio.
Carrying a big load.
Yeah, stress, lack of cardiovascular exercise, and then really... funny, actually, I've been doing a little bit of a deep dive into blood pressure because it's such a problem. So many, and it seems to be more of an issue for men than women.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's anecdotally that's just what I've been picking up on is just, it's men. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't have symptoms. It's not like you walk around being like, oh, my blood pressure.
Yeah.
That's why they call it the silent killer. But, your doctor usually makes you take it. And so that's how you know. But, a lot of the experts that I've been reading and listening to agree that the two biggest causes of blood pressure, and this is still a little controversial. A lot of different people think there is some disagreement here, but I have found a lot of them think that the two biggest causes are sleep apnea and insulin resistance, which is interesting. And
that's connected to high blood pressure.
Causal.
Or is the driver
the driving
of high
force would be the two, the
sleep
biggest
apnea,
sleep apnea
and insulin resistance.
So if you think of how many dudes and you're on the line, I would say like, you know, if you snore, if you wake up at night, if your wife is like, oh yeah, I have to sleep with earplugs. I cannot sleep. He is so loud. That's most men, honestly, especially if you tend towards being overweight. One of the biggest ways to cure sleep apnea is just to lose weight. That drives blood pressure up, which is really, really interesting. And then insulin resistance, which we just talked about, they're totally linked together. And most of the time, if you start getting that blood sugar management, that insulin under control, you see that blood pressure go down. So I just thought I would toss that out there, but don't forget blood pressure. It's a really big deal.
Yeah. And so, we kind of went through this blood, panel test about 3 months ago. And then, what you were able to do is you kind of looked at the blood panel test. Oh, that was one comment I wanted to make about, high blood pressure, first before we get into the blood panel stuff, was that a lot of doctors, if you have high blood pressure and then, you know, let's say 3-4 visits in a row or 5 visits, whatever, they'll start slapping you with a statin or something, they'll start just medicating you.
Yes.
Versus like trying to actually, maybe there's some natural ways we can adjust that before you get on a statin. Because once you get on a statin, it seems to be it's like kind of like a slippery slope into other medications and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there with the statin thing. Now, listen, I'm torn about, generally speaking, modern medicine does not take into account like lifestyle and nutrition. It does not push the potency and importance of lifestyle and nutrition half as or at all as much as it should, for sure. But I will say that a lot of you dudes walking around have dangerously high blood pressure. You don't realize it. You know, you don't feel it, but you do. It shows up, you know, when they read it. And I think a lot of these doctors know that if they tell you, hey, stop eating processed food, sleep better.
Like, that's not going to happen.
You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, in their defense, and they're like, I'd rather you be on a statin than have a heart attack. And so some of that's on us. You know, like it does take some self-educating, because most doctors are not going to say to you like, hey, one of the biggest things that you can do to help your blood pressure come down is, fix your sleep issues, fix your insulin resistance, but also take a high dose magnesium. Mm-hmm. Magtaurate is a huge one at fairly high doses. And also, you know, bring your potassium up. I mean, there's things you can do. And mm-hmm. most doctors don't even know, honestly. Yep. I think they should be pushing that. But really, really high blood pressure is a really big issue. And I think most of the people that walk into their office are looking for a pill. They have no desire to exercise, change their diet. Hopefully that's not you guys. You know, that's not what we're preaching, but I'm just saying that's what they're working with. But yeah, there are a lot of things that you could do and that I would absolutely try first before I put someone on a statin. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So we went through this blood panel exercise with me back in November. And then, you know, like we already mentioned, like my vitamin D was low. And so, well, that's an easy fix. Just subscribe. It's either suntan, which you can't do in Idaho, or add more vitamin D.
Yeah. I basically looked at your blood work and I gave you a handful of targeted uh-huh. supplements.
Yeah.
Some for blood sugar, some for liver, which we just remeasured. Yeah. And it did a lot.
Yeah, it did a lot
for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then vitamin D and a few other things. And again, it's kind of, and we just started you on a higher dose magnesium to see what that will do for you.
Because magnesium could impact blood pressure.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like when women, this is really interesting. When women go into the hospital with preeclampsia, do you know what that, really, really dangerously high blood pressure, which is fairly, can be common in pregnancy, especially at the end. The treatment for that is super, super high dose magnesium to bring their blood pressure down. So it actually, cause it has that. And this is why people take it at night. Because
it'll make you go to sleep too.
It's pro relaxation. It relaxes everything, including your vessels, you know? So it actually can be quite effective. And I'm not saying it's a panacea. Also with blood pressure, genetics plays a big role and some people are, I have, it's more rare, but I've worked with people who are the pinnacle of health, not overweight, active, best diet you've ever seen. And their blood pressure is still high. Exactly. Yeah, right. Their blood pressure is still high. And also stress is a huge driver too.
Just because I'm really strong.
Well, you know, and the stress thing is hard because there's some things you can do to mitigate stress.
Yeah.
But there's also for guys like you, it's like, what are you going to like quit your job or like just pick your favorite kid and only raise
you
that
you have to
one?
Carry your family and your job. So you have to carry this load.
Telling moms and dads to de-stress their life. Like there's only so much you can do. Yeah. So it can be a hard one, but there are some things you can try. And I would certainly try all these things, diet, exercise, some supplements before I got on a statin. But anyways,
that's one thing that Annie's been working with clients on for years now. Is kind of these blood panels and helping them kind of adjust, you know, whatever nutritional or dietary supplements in their lifestyle to maybe help without maybe leaning on medication as much as possible through this whole process.
Every supplement that I've got you on right now is completely natural and it will do zero, has almost no side of, like there's no harms there, as opposed to some of these pharmaceutical things where a lot of them come with a pretty long list of
suicide.
Suicide.
Thoughts of
your
suicide.
Your blood pressure will go down, but you might kill yourself.
But you might die. That's why your blood pressure went down, because you're dead.
And you know, there totally can be a place for those sorts of drugs, and they can save people's lives, but I do think that we lean on them way too much. Yep. Doctors hand them out way too soon, and there's a lot to be done with just the diet and exercise side of things. So anyways, so we gave you some targeted supplements.
Yeah.
And then do you want to talk about some of the other little things?
Yeah, I was going to just as quickly, we got about maybe 10, 15 minutes left here, but let's, so number one was kind of get the blood panel. Then what's some of the other things you wanted to hit in recommendations here?
I mean, it's pretty simple because part of what you need for a dude like you is it has to be simple and it has to be doable, or you're just going to be like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Like for real.
No, this is, and as simple as Annie made it for me too, I still cheated.
He cheated and did throw a few tantrums, but you know, that's built into the price of the, I understand, you know,
from day one, any diet that conflicts with the Lord's Supper, bread and wine,
I told him he couldn't take communion. I was you absolutely can't have communion.
She suspended me from
the Lord's
Supper.
I suspended him from the Lord's Supper on behalf of this blood group. I'm just kidding, guys. We didn't do that. But anyways, okay, number one, we said and this is so huge, gentlemen, if you take away, besides just getting...
This is number two.
Number one in terms of action steps beyond
blood.
So beyond getting your blood work done and finding someone who knows what they're doing to read it and help you with it, this is the number one action step is stop eating out. stop eating out. If you literally didn't even get blood work, but you just were like, starting today, I'm not eating out. I'm not eating fast, specifically the kind of food that you would eat at lunchtime or even at breakfast when you're already headed into work and you're in the middle of your day. So this is like your McDonald's, like, what do you call those breakfast things, or going to whatever restaurant
McGriddles
that you love for lunch four times a week, you know, like eating out makes you unhealthy, like, period. Like, there really is, I wish it wasn't true, but if that's a staple in your life, that is one of the biggest things driving unhealth, especially if you're not able to be really, really active.
But what about Jared at Subway? He lost a lot of weight.
Jared lost.
He's also in jail now for pedophilia.
We don't talk about Jared.
He's not a,
there's some confounding factors.
Maybe I shouldn't have brought him up. He just kind of, my argument just ate itself.
Never bring up Jared. Yeah. Never bring up Jared. And yeah. So just literally stop eating out. So this is what we did for Gabe. Is number one, we said, and this will tie into the next step, which is stop skipping breakfast.
Yeah.
Intermittent fasting is really big right now. And we could do a whole different show on that. And I'm fine with it. I would say women are more into it than men, but a lot of men are kind of into it in the like commercialized way where you just skip breakfast because it's easy. Mm-hmm. It's easy to just skip it and then move on with your day. But what happens is, you usually end up making worse choices at a fast food restaurant later in the day because you're hungry and because you're not home anymore and you can't eat home cooked food. So we just said, okay, you're going to eat eggs every single morning because that's going to help mitigate hunger later in the day, which it absolutely does, especially eggs. So I'm not saying eat garbage in the morning. Okay. Do not eat banana bread, eat eggs every morning. And if you can't do eggs for some reason, make it like Greek yogurt, something that's very protein, you know, protein centric. And another reason we're doing that is just because any food you eat at home, you can control, right? You can control what oils go into it, any added ingredients, you can control amount, everything. So easy. Eggs in the morning. And that way he's not quite as hungry at lunchtime. And what we started doing is just saying, we're not eating out. So either you're going to pack leftovers from last night, which again, gentlemen, I've said this before, you can do it. If you are like, I'm picky and I don't like leftovers, you need to probably get over that.
I almost called him my family member for that right now. But I
talk to women all the time who are like, my husband will not eat leftovers. I'm just like, get him on the phone with me. Like, are you rich? And no. Okay. Are you really, really healthy? No. Okay. You need to start eating leftovers. Your wife is working real hard to make you a healthy dinner the night before. Make a lot of it. Make it enough for lunch the next day. Or our fallback was what? What did you take with you if you didn't have leftovers?
Protein shake.
Yeah, a good quality whey protein. Because
and a cheese stick. Usually I needed like a cheese stick.
He found that he needed like some macadamia nuts or a little beef jerky or a cheese stick.
So you get a little protein drink at lunch and then a cheese stick or some nuts or whatever.
Yeah.
And that helped. I want to add a couple of things here. That point might sound, the leftover point might sound a little picky because, you know, I mean, what Annie's really getting at is like the, a lot of the restaurants use kind of like cheaper oils and so forth that make it, you know, that your body has a harder time processing seed oils, particularly seed oils.
It's not that it has a hard time processing it. It's more like it's toxic to your body and then it will store it in your fat for like years. Like it's super
inflammatory. Studies have shown like certain seed oils will just stay around for a long time. Especially, so your body doesn't process out.
Especially if you're not really active, which is kind of.
Right. That was the point I wanted to get at was, you know, again, this goes back to our first comments where like, you know, men particularly in our era, like we aren't working out. We aren't, our jobs during the day are in the office, on the phone, over the computer, stuff like that. So your body doesn't have all the various ways of processing that, let's say, the old economy had.
Or like, like naturally you don't detoxing.
You wouldn't sweat during the day.
You're not burning it off. Yeah, that's a really good point.
So that's why we have to maybe, you know, kind of think about some of these things in a little more particular way than previous generations had, because we just don't have the only really way that my body's going to detox and process things is through my liver.
Unless I
go work out or play basketball or something, which I'm not really doing.
Well, even
and I'm
then,
not sweating. I don't have various then, other ways of detoxing.
It's still going through your liver, but really, really active people, it, to some degree, can get away with a little bit more. But that's just not who we're talking to right now, right?
That's the point. That's why I wanted to say this might sound a little particular, or a little, legalistic. What you aren't positioning this in any legalistic way.
I think this is in its own little way. Like we talked about the Overton window of food in past, like how we just need it to shift. I think gentlemen. In particular, this subset of men needs to shift their Overton window of what normal lunch food is going to be. Either it's going to be a whey protein shake because you just didn't have time one way or another, or you need to be a little more disciplined and a little bit more forward thinking. Just pack up whatever steak and broccoli was for dinner the night before and take it with you. Just a tiny bit of planning. Write yourself a sticky note, like whatever it takes, and stop looking at eating crappy, inflammatory, low quality fast food almost every day as normal or as healthy, because it's not. And your blood work will show you that, right? Like, so we just, I think there needs to be a little bit of a shift. So if you're like, that's insane, your Overton window maybe needs to shift a little bit, especially if you know that your health is not where it should be. Mm-hmm. So anyways.
Okay. Number three was eat breakfast, eat eggs. You already stated this.
Already one point on that.
One point I wanted to make here is, like, before we made this shift, I was actually doing that intermittent fasting thing where I wouldn't eat breakfast. I'll just skip it and go out, and then I wouldn't eat till lunch. It's easy to do. It wasn't that difficult. And so I probably did that for 6 months. Well, I didn't really lose any weight. It was actually kind of frustrating. I'm like, I'm literally not eating from dinner the night before. Maybe I'd have some snacks later because we weren't really, so maybe I'd have a snack at 8 o'clock, whatever. But I basically wasn't eating until, you know, from 8 o'clock until noon the next day.
Yeah, you didn't see
it. And I wasn't really losing any weight, which is hilarious because I'm like, I'm skipping breakfast.
It's not that weird. But again, a lot of times, what happens is that your hunger catches up with you and you end up eating a lot more and a lot less healthful choices. Like, what's worse, eating two eggs in the morning, extra food, where normally you would eat nothing?
That's right.
Or like a bunch of like ice cream, or just think about the kinds of choices you make at night versus you make in the morning. Right. I mean, the ice cream doesn't usually come out in the morning. It comes out at night. So you're offsetting.
I want to live in a world where I can have ice cream for breakfast.
That's called the new heavens and the new earth.
We're there. It's there, but not already.
Almost, but not yet. But does that make sense? You're offsetting way worse eating choices that you're going to make later in the day, because that hunger will catch up with you. And part of that is your body just telling you.
So the nice thing about these last 3 months is actually being able to eat eggs and actually lose weight. I mean, I lost probably about 10 pounds in the last 3 months, just, you know, chipping away at it just by, you know, taking the supplements and just eating a little, very minor choices. My choices just shifted.
Yeah.
Not in any significant way. I'll finish those comments here in a minute. But
We already covered eat eggs for breakfast, and then in terms of dinner, you know, you got to get your wife on the same page here. Most women are more than happy to accommodate their husband getting healthier. Yeah. I have found that I certainly am, and I, you know, anything that your husband will actually do that will be helpful to, you know, to his longevity and his health. Most wives are on board, but just look for a protein centric dinner. Meat and veggies. And I will say, depending on, you know, your history, your, you know, family history, and where, when you got your blood work done, where your insulin and glucose are, that's where I would put your carbs. Okay. But it's possible, like Gabe right now, we're finding that he's seen some improvements in his glucose, but we still need to figure out how to get this insulin down. He's a little bit more of a challenge, probably genetically. We know that he's got a lot of diabetes in his family. So he may be someone who just doesn't handle as much carbs as someone else might. So we're not going to add a lot of carbs in yet for him. But if your insulin and glucose are fine, that's where I would eat them. Try to make them clean. Okay. So like sweet potato or squash. Like, yeah, exactly. Your wife's homemade sour bread. I mean, you don't need to go crazy, but that's a great time to have them. Mm-hmm. Again, because you're eating them in a way that you can control what they are, rather than pigging out on like two Big Macs in the middle of the day. They're yummy, but you know, again, we're trying to figure out very practical ways. It takes very little time, you know, and we're just being strategic. Eat your carbs at night where your wife can make them for you, and they're clean and they're on your terms. And then after dinner, try to be done eating.
Yeah, no more snacking.
Try to be done eating. And if you ate enough protein during the day, it should be no problem. A lot of times when you have late night snacking, it's because you just underate in general, or in particular, you did not eat enough protein earlier in the day. So protein.
And I'd say our last 3 month plan, we're shifting it a little bit these next 3 months, but our last 3 month plan was I'd eat eggs, you know, standard, you know, healthy lunch or protein shake and cheese stick or something like that. And then at dinner, I'd be able to get my carbs. And I like that. I honestly hate any diets that I'm not really joking when I do say this, but I hate any diet that really does conflict with like the Lord's Supper, like bread and wine.
I know you do. You know? Yes.
And so not being able to have like a carb at night, you know, or taking carbs absolutely out of my diet was like, I'm just not interested in that. So we were able to do that at least these last 3 months, but it still wasn't, as we concluded, still wasn't really working. My blood sugar My insulin.
Your insulin still needs some work.
Still needs some work and everything. So we're shifting that. We're actually going to shift that moving forward to where, well, I'm just going to have carbs on my Sabbath dinner, my Sabbath dinner.
But
kind
you know,
of thing.
Even
so
then,
I'm not going to do carbs during the week.
But even then, for you, the goal is not to be there forever. And we've talked about this. How going really low carb, really long term, is not good for your health, and it can actually cause you to be more insulin resistant. Right. It's that bell curve, but. There is something to be said about spending a shorter season there. Mm-hmm. And again, you're a little bit of an exception because of your genetics. So,
and so if you can kind of pull back, the whole goal is to, well, maybe your insulin will start kicking in and regulating better.
Well, your
and
cells then will become ideally more sensitive.
More sensitive.
Right. So when you do have carbohydrates, and again, the kind you have matters. You may get to the point where you can handle some basmati rice, a sweet potato, you know, some sourdough just fine. Whereas if you're eating something really processed and terrible, that still maybe wouldn't be as good of a choice to you. So the quality matters. So it's very nuanced. It depends on the individual for sure. Yeah. So
Take carbs out or have them at dinner.
Yes. Depending on your insulin, your blood sugar control for sure. And then let's just talk a little bit about the exercise side before we wrap up.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah.
So far we've just talked about the nutrition, and nutrition is easy to, it's not easy. It's simple. And it's, I guess, easy in that everybody eats. Like, you have to eat.
Right.
It's more.
You have to address that. You have to.
But everybody eats. So really all we've done here is just swap some things around, be a little bit strategic. Yep. But you're going to eat regardless. Exercise is a little harder because that's something you add in, right? And again, all these really busy guys who are exhausted and just stressed and have no time, it's hard to fathom adding anything in. So what we did, the number one thing I would say for you dudes, and remember, this is minimum effective dose. This is not the perfect, like, I don't look at, if some guy was like, I want to get ripped, I want to get the healthiest I can get, I wouldn't just be like, just walk. I would say do more for sure. But again, for this specific—
For a guy like me who's not walking.
For someone who's doing nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, what could we actually get you to do that would be the most impactful? Number one is just walk. And I've talked about this before. It's true for ladies also, but it's so effective for men. I have had some men north of 30 who didn't change anything.
Yeah, and just started walking every day.
And just walked 30 minutes a day on their lunch break. Uh-huh. Didn't change, just wore whatever they wore to work, just walked 30 minutes a day and dropped like 40 pounds, which frankly makes me mad because, and most women listening, because like men just lose weight so much, so much more easily.
You just make little adjustments. I had a buddy who just stopped drinking Coke and he's,
I skipped lunch one time and I lost 50 pounds. Exactly.
I just took Coke out of my diet and I was fine.
It's actually,
kept everything else.
Unless you have some sort of medical, you know, there's something weird going on with you. It's actually really simple and quite easy compared to us ladies to lose weight and get healthier. You just have to fit in these small habits and be consistent. So one thing we did is we moved our treadmill to your office.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Because if you live somewhere like Idaho, where a good portion of the year it's dark, it's cold. Some people are hardcore. If you can get outside, being out in nature is ideal. Mm-hmm. You know, put the coat on, buy the right shoes, do it. But we thought that your best bet to actually doing it would be to actually bring a treadmill into the office. And then we're trying to, did you already buy that thing?
I have a desk. I have a little desk that goes on the treadmill.
Exactly.
A desk connection or extension or something
that you can actually put your laptop there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually think this is a brilliant idea so that you can work while you walk. Yeah. And we're just looking at like 30 minutes a day.
Or take phone calls. I mostly took phone calls while I did it.
Guys, game changer. So after dinner, if that's when you need to do it, after meals is phenomenal for blood sugar control. Like we've talked about during lunchtime or even just while you're working, walk, get on your little headset, walk, 30 minutes a day, huge. The only other thing that we tried adding in are what we call trigger sessions. People call them different things. Joel calls it integrated intervals.
Trigger session. Joel who?
Joel Green. My hero right now. People, exercise snacks. That's one I've heard.
Exercise
trigger
snacks.
Trigger sessions sounds very masculine. So I was going to go with that because maybe you guys will be more likely to do it.
I kind of like exercise snacks.
But it's
a little misleading.
Yeah. So describe what they are and then your progress with your push-up because I think it's pretty cool.
So what Annie, what we kind of figured out or what Annie wanted to kind of work with me on was just find, you know, just do push-ups in the morning, you know, do three sets of 10. In the morning,
pick a movement,
and then next month, you know, do three sets of 10s of push-ups, and then add some, you know, air squats.
Yeah,
and then the next month, do three sets of, you know, do your push-ups and then air squats, and then add maybe pull-ups.
So that's
pull-up bar,
which he hates,
and I'm horrible at pull-ups. I'm long and gangly, and you know, it's just I'm horrible at them. But they're actually kind of fun because they actually stretch out my body and, you know.
A little bit of traction.
Yeah, a little traction and everything. So I like the feel, at least the initial feel when I hang there.
Yeah, so how many push-ups did you start with and what are you at now 3 months later?
And so I haven't been doing push-ups or any workout for probably a couple of years. And so I started out with basically 3 sets of 10. And it was honestly, I started off with 2 sets of 10 and 1 set of 5 actually is probably where I started off.
And when you say 3 sets, remember it's a trigger. So like literally in the morning you would just before the shower.
Right before I hop in the shower.
You do one set.
Bam, bam, bam.
And then midday you'd hit the ground 1 set.
Yeah.
And then later in the afternoon, maybe when you're feeling sleepy,
you do one set at night. So
you don't warm up. You don't change your clothes. Yeah. You don't have to go to a gym.
You don't sweat. I mean, it's just
do them. And then you
basic.
It's like max effort 1 set. Yeah.
So I would do my 3 sets before the shower, but I did. There were some days where I could only get 1 set in before shower, and then at lunch or whatever in my studio, I'd pump out 10 more on the ground or something like that.
You started with 10. Where are you at now?
Started at 10. Now I can do 50 in a row,
Which
so I can just do
awesome.
You know, 1 set of 50, bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
And it literally, I mean, I can do that faster than I was doing 3 sets of 10, the push-ups too, which is pretty funny.
50, that's huge.
The pull-up thing, I still haven't really progressed much.
Well, we just started.
But it's like I can barely get 1.5, maybe 2 pull-ups. And you're talking this way,
not a chin-up, yeah.
Because I can do chin-ups pretty easy. Chin-ups are a lot easier.
If you want.
It's this grip, not this grip. That's really hard, but that's the pull-ups you have me doing. So I'm doing this.
Yep.
And I can maybe get two in. Now, I haven't done it in a week, so I probably can only get 1 in now and everything. And then the air squat thing. The air squat thing was the first thing I actually started with. Mm-hmm. And man, I could, when I first started doing air squats, the first week of it, it hurt so bad. Yeah. And it was just an air squat. It felt so dumb.
I mean,
but it was just an air squat. But again, I haven't been doing those air squats in such a functional movement. And I haven't been doing them. I haven't done any movement like that. And so the soreness was real.
Oh, for
just
real.
For 3 sets of
anything
10 air squats.
Sore. Yeah. Anything. Yeah. New.
And those are easy too. Cause you can just do it before you get in the shower, do one when you get in the shower and then do one later after lunch or something like that.
Yeah. And you can tack, you can start with one movement, get up, work up to 2 or 3 sets, 3-4 sets a day, and then tack another movement on. Yep. So you do a max effort push up, a max effort air squat, move on. And then eventually I think pull-ups are phenomenal. They're a great way to fire up your lats. They're functional. They're, a compound movement. No one loves them except for tiny, tiny people.
Except for short people with short arms.
The tiny people love them. Yeah. But you still will progress. You'll do one and then eventually you'll do 2 at a time and eventually you'll do 3 at a time. And ladies, moms, this is, if you're in a position where you're not able to make it to the gym or have, you're not really in a place where you can have a robust lifting routine right now, this is a phenomenal way to get stronger. I mean, seriously, really, really fast. And for women in particular, I mean, if you don't like pull-ups, pull-ups are like women's ultimate nemesis. Yeah. Like everyone's like, no, not pull-ups. I've never been able to do them. This is a great way to get better at them. And it's just this slow progression over time. Yeah. And again, you don't have to change. You don't have to warm up. You don't have to go to the gym. You just crank them out randomly throughout
and all
the
these
day.
Exercises, they're pretty functional. I mean,
and you can pick your movement.
I mean, pull-ups, if you fall in a hole, you can pull yourself out.
That is what I want him to have the option.
People fall in the holes regularly.
There's holes everywhere. What if you fall in the holes? Oh my gosh.
All right, what's the last one here, baby?
Oh, last thing. I tacked this on.
Good sleep.
Really try to improve your sleep. And I know we could probably do a whole podcast on sleep, which I wouldn't mind doing because it's a huge issue. Tons of women message me all the time and there's like, I hit 35 and I can't sleep. It's such a problem. And sleep is such a big, one of the biggest driving forces of our health. Yeah. Our ability to lose weight, our ability to make good food choices, not sleeping is such a problem.
Yeah.
And again, we even mentioned earlier, it's one of the biggest drivers. The apnea is one of the biggest drivers of high blood pressure, which obviously has its own consequences. So really, really take a look at your life. And obviously I understand if you have newborn babies, if you, you might be in a season where sleep just isn't going to be optimal. Mm-hmm. But I find oftentimes there are things, no matter what season you're in, that you can do to help yourself sleep better. Normally you want to be, if you can, in line with your circadian rhythms. And that simply means you want to be awake when it's light. You want to be asleep when it's dark. And a lot of us tend to sleep in more and stay up later than we should.
Yep.
Another thing that's really easy and simple is just get away from blue light at night. So that's all your screens. And I know
cell phone.
It's hard. And I'm really
right now it's March Madness. So we aren't going to do that right
now. We're going to pin that one
for March Madness.
Yeah.
Till
the next month. But, even though it feels, when you're vegging through Instagram or whatever, and it's like, it feels relaxing in that you're vegging, but that blue light is sending all kinds of signals to your brain to It basically is blocking melatonin. Oh. And you need melatonin to come up and cortisol to come down in order for you to sleep well. So if you're desperate, you guys, put your phone away, turn the TV off, read a book with your eyeballs. And I know this works because I can scroll on my phone for an hour before I fall asleep. If I start reading a book, I am out.
You're out in minutes.
And it can even be a book I find interesting. Mm-hmm. I am out. Like, it really makes a difference. And then last, make sure your room is cool. That's a big one. Nobody's going to sleep well hot for the most part, unless you got something weird going on. And then lastly, there are a couple supplements that I think everybody should probably be taking anyways that really, really help encourage sleep. One of those at night is magnesium. And again, we already talked about magnesium being helpful oftentimes or sometimes with blood pressure, but it just generally relaxes you. It's very, it calms you. It's very conducive to sleep. Most of us are mag deficient anyway. So a good like magnesium glycinate is phenomenal. Taurate has good research around it for blood pressure in particular. So you could look into that. And then the other, supplement that again is very natural. It's not going to hurt you is glycine. It's just an amino acid. It's cheap. You can take several grams of that, and that also can aid with sleep quite a bit. So there's way more to be said. There's whole sleep stacks you could look into, but I'm just going to say sleep is huge. And a lot of you dads have a lot of sleep debt to pay off. So do what you can to get as close to 8 hours most nights as possible. It makes a difference.
8 hours. It never happens.
See, this is why you guys are all going to die.
It never happens.
I know.
Go on vacation. Catch up on vacation.
Go on vacation a couple times a year and catch up on that sleep debt. I think
Thank you, baby.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, as our show, Water Break's going to drop every Saturday. And here's where Neil cues the music. But every Saturday at 9 a.m. Okay. It's going to drop on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/waterbreaktv. In our app, on our podcast, our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, all that stuff. So that's where you can catch it. But every Saturday, 9 a.m. I think is when it drops. And you can catch it for the weekend and just look for it every Saturday. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining Water Break. And thank you, baby, for all your advice and all the conversation. Love sitting down with you.
Welcome. Always a pleasure. See you guys next week.